and iTunes International. From the golden sands of Bondi Beach across your world.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm delighted to welcome Melissa Greemer, our correspondent, who is, I think, in Melbourne. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thanks, Henry. Great to be here.
Now, you're a well-travelled person. Where have you been?
Well, in the last 2 months, I've had 4 trips. I went to Tokyo in Japan, Jakarta in Indonesia. I went to Oman, and then a trip to the Gold Coast, which isn't as exotic, especially given it was schoolies. And for our
humans
in Europe who might not know what schoolies is, it's a bit like spring break for the Americans, where, you know, end of school leavers descend on the Gold Coast to wreak havoc and celebrate finishing high school.
And they go absolutely mad here on the Gold Coast. And, you know, the Gold Coast never really gets cold, does it? And, of course, it's coming into summer in Australia. Well, it is now summer, but as they celebrate it, they go a bit mad. You know, I was in the Gold Coast at the same time as you another year, and we sort of went home by 7 p.m. This is too wild out there.
I actually didn't see a lot, but I was very busy at a work conference. I happened to be there when it was the end of school term for Queensland, and I heard that the following week was going to be the interstaters, and it gets a bit crazy there. I've heard in recent years they've got schoolie zones, and they've created these zones to, A, ensure the kids are confined to one space and they're all looked after by the police because they do go crazy. But it's also to keep the toolies out. And basically toolies are, you know, people who haven't finished school, but then they go on there to kind of take advantage of drunk, you know, young kids. So there you go.
And are the school, the toolies, are they tend to be older? Is that right?
Yes. So I guess a toolie is anyone kind of like age 20 upwards, or maybe 21, 22 upwards.
Get a life already. Now, talking about having a life, you have one, and you mentioned Japan. I've never been to Japan, but I'm, you know, a good friend of mine has been to Japan, I think, 14 times. He's obsessed with Japan, and he lives here in Australia. How did you find Japan, and was it the first time you were there?
This was my second trip to Japan. I went 8 years ago for work, and that trip was kind of like a famil, as we call it in the industry. And I went to visit all the places that we would send our groups. I used to work for an educational travel company, so a lot of school trips and students being sent to Japan. So that was my taster. My trip this time around, as your brother-in-law Bruce put it, was very lost in translation. I went to Tokyo only, and I basically spent my short time in Japan just visiting bars, really.
Well, what else are you going to do? I love your reference to Lost in Translation with Bill Murray. Lovely movie that was. Do you find that, you know, in your experience in Japan, do you find them a very different kind of race of people?
Yeah, here's the thing. I went to an area called the Golden Guy, and it's a series of very narrow laneways with tiny bars inside. And basically, there's usually room for 5 people to sit, and there might be a bathroom squeezed in and then some standing room. And some of these bars take Japanese only. And the reason for that is they don't want to be disturbed by Westerners. And some bars that took both Japanese and Westerners had signs like, please be quiet, please be respectful. They don't like the loud Western drinking culture of us getting in there and getting drunk and getting very leery. But the Japanese love a drink.
And they love to smoke.
Yes. It's really interesting. This time I went to Japan, some bars you're allowed to smoke in, but then others you can't. And then you can't smoke on the street in public. So now when you walk along the street, they've got these
smoking areas.
Yes, with glass cages, but they're open. It's so funny. It is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I find them very, you know, it's fascinating. They're so conservative in some ways. You know, if they go to a public toilet, they have a little noise machine that they play so no one hears them poop. Can you believe that?
Yes, I thought it was hilarious. And it saves you going in there and putting your Spotify on so people hear music instead of you. I've done that in a public toilet.
Ah!
So I actually like that machine in Japan. I love the toilets over there. I love how clean everything is. I wish that we had public toilets like that. But here's the thing, the Golden Guy area, you know, I don't know how many people are familiar with salarymen and the fact that, you know, work is your whole life, and then they tend to be forced to go out and drink after work, and they I'll often drink to excess, and I saw a lot of people sitting drunk in gutters, and people just step over them, walk around them, and it's almost like nothing to see here. And I was walking down the street at like 2:30 in the afternoon, and I came across this guy, and he was in the most oddest, uncomfortable position. He basically fell face first onto the footpath. He was kind of in the fetal position with his head down and face, like, you know, smashed against the pavement with his work bag, tote bag over him. And he was really literally in the middle of the footpath, and everyone just walked around him like he was a dog, like there was nothing to see. And you'd see people, friends of mine who lived in Japan said you'd always see them on the subway late at night. They'd fallen asleep. But one time I saw a girl, and she had a very short skirt on, and she was very drunk, and she was standing by herself, on the pavement by herself, really, really wasted. And I was a little bit concerned for her safety being a female, but everyone just walked on by once again.
How could you tell she was drunk? She was standing, but she wasn't standing very stably.
That was me saying the wrong thing. She was passed out with a short skirt on, and her head was rolling, and she looked wasted, like completely wasted. And I was a bit concerned for her because being female.
Of course.
Every time I saw someone this wasted, it made me think they didn't get drunk alone. What happened to the people they were drinking with? Because I wouldn't leave someone that I was drinking with like that. And I remember there's been a couple of incidences. One in particular sticks out when I was in Melbourne on Brunswick Street, and we met this girl, and she was a foreigner. She was passed out in front of a very popular bar / nightclub on Sydney Road. And she was, you know, in her early 20s. She was vomiting. We asked her where she was going, but because she was staying with a friend, she couldn't remember where this person lived. And we were trying to rouse her, and we didn't want to leave her. And of course, security guards in Australia are hopeless. They don't want to touch their hands with anyone. At least they get, you know, fined for, you know, violating our alcohol service of alcohol laws, right?
Yeah.
So the bouncers are disgusting on Sydney Road. They're disgusting anywhere. They don't actually look after you. A friend of mine passed out in a bar in Sydney because she was given, like, her drinks were spiked, and she was on the toilet, like on the toilet floor, and she was yelling to girls, "I can't move, I can't move," because she felt like paralyzed. "Can you help me?" The bouncers came in, picked her up, scooped her in a taxi, threw her back door so no one could see her, threw her in, didn't explain to the cab drivers what was wrong.
Oh, my God.
Just said, send her home. And the cab was really reluctant to take her because he thought she was drunk and was going to vomit in his cab. She'd been drugged. They didn't want to take any responsibility because it was their venue.
Yeah, and just I was going to say, I had, you know, I was, I, at the time, I would go walking around Bondi just late at night because I couldn't sleep. And one night I was passing the Beach Road Hotel, which is my local pub here on Bondi Beach, and there was a taxi stopped and a girl sort of leaning out. And I thought there's something wrong with her because she couldn't get out of the cab, the back seat of the cab. And I sort of helped her out. And the cabbie said, I've got nothing to do with this. This is not anything to do with me. And clearly thought he was in trouble for some reason. And I said, that's okay. She never paid him. I noticed that. And then I said, are you okay? And she just seemed very dizzy. I think she was just very drunk, quite frankly. And I walked her home, which wasn't far. And then I made sure she got in the front door. Her neighbour was there. Sorry, not her neighbour, her flatmate. And she was okay. And then I walked home. So that was my good deed for the day.
Very nice. The time I found that girl on the footpath and the bouncers wouldn't help, my friends and I called the police and they took her to the police station and put her in a cell for the night just so she had somewhere safe to sleep. But another night we found a girl wandering around and we stopped the police and the police go, we don't want to help. They were happy to leave a female on the side of the road like at 4 in the morning just drunk. So then we had to find a cab and find her address and send her home. So I find all of that really, really interesting in Japan.
Yes, you know. Yes, you brought it back to Japan again. No, just on the note of all this, in Holland, the police are trained in psychology, and let's face it, the job of a policeman involves psychology because you're constantly dealing with people who may be, you know, in trouble. And I would strongly, I think that all police should be trained in psychology as like the Dutch police are. Now, you were in Japan. You had a good experience?
Oh, I did. I'd gone there after a kind of breakup. I'd been, you know, seeing this a-hole on and off all year. And I went over there and as a single traveller, going to the Golden Guy area, it was a great place to be by myself because I met different people every night and I had these really fun experiences. And those kind of experiences you can only get when you're out late and open and being in the bars that are so small like that, you just talk to people because like you're all sitting there together. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You felt safe. I know that part of your journey you were with someone else, but this part you were alone. Does it ever worry you? And you've travelled. You're so well travelled because of Intrepid Travel and where you worked. Do you ever worry about being a female and being alone and travelling internationally?
Look, when I go somewhere, I'm pretty, you know, I don't let the fact that I'm a female stop me from doing stuff. And
good.
There'll be times where I'll walk off somewhere and I think, what am I doing? I'm by myself. And I guess it depends on the destination. Like when I travel through Mexico, there's a lot of stuff that happens in Mexico.
Bet.
I remember having a guidebook with me. Oh, don't take the public buses here because, you know, they know that foreigners get on it and they'll often rob the buses. So it's about being very, very aware of your surroundings. And, you know, or like in Mexico, I never took my eyes off my stuff. My bag was always on me. I was always looking around. I remember I was in a really busy market around Christmas time and I had an SLR camera on me. And this was only in, you know, 2019. And I noticed that a man was looking at me and I didn't like the way he was looking at me. I caught his eye. And so I moved to put my back against the wall next to a shop. And I stood there with holding my camera, holding my bag, looking at him out of the corner of my eye. So he knew that I'd seen him. And eventually he got up and walked away. Now, when I did the tequila train, that was in the same city. I had made friends with – I was on the English-speaking bus, which was nowhere near as full as all the other buses with Spanish commentators. And I made friends with six people and there was an American man who was, you know, CEO or very high up for a company that imported fruit and vegetables from Mexico. And he was in town to visit the local branch from the United States. And so – all the top executives from that branch took him out for the day to do this tequila tour. So they all spoke English and they were local and they'd taken me under my wing, under their wing, because I was by myself. Mm. And, you know, you start drinking tequila at 9:30 in the morning.
Yes, I was going to say.
And the train gets back in at 7:30, and you're on this train for 2.5 hours at the end, and we're in the VIP cabin, and we were just doing tequila shots for the 2.5 hour train ride back after having drank tequila all day, right? And then one of the girls, that she was Mexican, that was with us, she turned to everyone and said, "Those guys in the corner are not on the tour. They're here to rob people." And I turned around. They were the only sober people on the train. Everyone was drunk and singing and being as you would be on tequila after, you know, 10 hours of drifting it.
Yeah.
And I was drunk. So stupid me, with my bravado, went up and
You've never been a shy person, Marissa.
I went and sat with them, you know.
Oh, you did?
Trying to speak to them in English and my bad Spanish. "Hi, how are you? How's everything?" And they looked at me like they, like if looks were, could kill, like they had daggers in their eyes, right?
Yeah.
And I came back, I said, "They're definitely not drunk. They were not amused at me. They were not impressed that I went up and, you know, drew attention to them being drunk." And so they turned, the people I was with said to the train guards, "They're clearly here to rob people. We want you to get us off the train first." So what happened is we got ushered off the train, and they had waiting transfers for them when the train pulled in. So they made sure they got escorted, and they took care of me, and they got me in a taxi and sent me to the hotel so I would be all right. And I remember to the point where we got offered – ushered off the taxi, off the train to taxis. I don't remember anything after that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they helped you. It was a wonderful thing. This was actually in Mexico City. Is that right?
No, it was in Jalisco, and I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. It's been a couple of years since I did it, but it starts in Jalisco. You know, do this tour to the town where tequila's in, and it's like a 2-hour journey. Anyway, so I took the bus in the morning and then the tequila train back.
So I'm guessing that tequila is actually from Mexico.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. Taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me, tell me that you'll wait for me, hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. There's so many times I've let you down, so many times I've played around. I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I think of you. Every song I sing for you. When I come back, I'll wear your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me, tell me that you'll wait for me, hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm a leaving on a jet plane, I don't know when I'll be back again. To go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes, I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the time I won't have to say, kiss me. go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again.
From Melbourne, Australia, Melissa Creamer on Bondi Tunes International.
This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting Around Your World. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and Melissa Creamer is in Melbourne, where she resides. Now, we've been talking about Japan. Where did you go next?
I went to Jakarta, and I went to Jakarta just for a work trip. Not much I can really say about Jakarta. It's very busy, very traffic heavy. You don't really go to many places because the traffic's so bad.
Oh, really? It's like Thailand, I guess.
Oh, no. I think it's much worse than Thailand, actually, if you can believe that.
Wow.
one thing I noticed, though, was the quality of the rice was nowhere near as good as the quality of rice in Thailand.
So interesting.
There's an observation.
You really are into your food, and that's part of your, you know, part of your traveling must be the experience of food.
Oh, totally. And it was interesting because, you know, we had this long day. We had work sessions. Then they took us bowling, you know, those team building exercises that you do.
I hate them.
And then everyone was like dying for a drink, right? We're all like, we need a drink. It's very hot. And I said to one of my teammates, colleagues from Thailand, I said, I have a feeling there's going to be no alcohol at dinner. So people started asking, and they were all told, no, we're not having any alcohol.
Oh, no.
We were all horrified, right?
Oh, indeed.
We've been forced to bowl, you know, and then we found out because we did have quite a lot of Muslim.
Yes.
Right? Mm. And so in Indonesia, if you go to a halal restaurant where halal food is served, they don't serve alcohol either. So it's either all in or not. So because we had to have halal food for our Muslim colleagues, we couldn't get any booze there.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been to the United Arab Emirates and so have you. And I've noticed that there are places where you can go to drink alcohol for tourists, even though, you know, there's a lot of Muslims and they don't drink alcohol. And I think that's the whole point here. But there's always summer. And ironically, in the red centre of Australia, if you look at Ayers Rock, Uluru, as it's also known, the Aboriginals, they're trying to stop them getting drunk, right? But if you're a tourist, you can go into a bar, which I find very interesting in a country like Australia, but I guess they find that necessary. So you were in Indonesia, and it is worth mentioning to our listeners that you were on a work trip.
Yes, yes. Mm. So, it wasn't very exciting.
But how was Oman? Because you went there, didn't you?
I went to Oman. Oman was a personal trip. I've been to quite a few Middle Eastern countries, and Oman was on my list. Oman was very interesting. Bruce, your brother-in-law, had also been there recently. Muscat for 2 days. Mm. And so, speaking of drinking, I arrived at the hotel in Muscat, and again, very hot. It had taken 24 hours from leaving my apartment to getting to the hotel in Muscat. And, you know, when I've done that much travel and it's hot and I'm tired, I just want a beer at the end of it. So I went to the hotel reception on check-in and I said, do you have a bar? And the receptionist says, no, madam, we are a dry hotel.
Oh, however, my God.
We do have a lounge bar on the rooftop next to the pool. And I said, oh, does that serve beer? And she said, no, it doesn't. And I replied, then why are you telling me about it?
Did it sell any other alcohol?
There was nothing. There was nothing. And then I was reading in the Lonely Planet that you can't even buy alcohol as a foreigner unless you have a residency permit and you have an alcohol license to go and purchase it. So I had brought a bottle of vodka with me. I wasn't really aware of this situation. And had I been...
I would have bought more vodka on the plane, yes?
Well, I would have, because there's duty free there. You can buy like 24 packs of beer.
Yes. And
a 24 pack. And so I didn't get my beer the first day, and I... You know, I had a vodka soda in my room. And then the next day we hired a car, but I had to do all the driving because my traveling companion doesn't drive. Mm-hmm. And so we drove to this sinkhole. Then we went to this wadi called Wadi Saab. And it's very old school in terms of the experience because it's very rough. Like you walk in on foot and you're scrambling over rocks and there's not a clear pathway. And then you spend like an hour wading through water to go to this beautiful blue cave, which you sit in, and then you've got to come out again the same way. And very hot, scrambling around, and then had to drive on to the next town, which was Sur. And as we drove into town, I saw a sign at a hotel with a martini glass. And I went, oh, there's alcohol. But then we kept driving 10 minutes into town and I was desperately looking for a bar and there was none. And then I was looking online and it's like the only place that serves alcohol is this bar, and it was the one that we'd passed. And it was an extremely long day. And I said to my friend, I need to go back because I really do want to have a beer. Mm. So went back, parked the car, went to the hotel reception and said, do you have a bar? She said, yes, you need to go back out into the car park. There's a building there. Go up the stairs and you'll see it on level two. So we go out, we go into this car park and we see this building that looks abandoned. We walk in and we kind of walk up this flight of stairs and it's all looking very dodgy and ominous. And we're like, what the heck is going on? Then we see this tiny, tiny sign that says Cheers Bar with an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walk in and we see another small set of stairs with like a landing. And I'm like, if you get drunk, that's not a really good place to come out of. But so we walk in and we see this very dimly lit room with some bright neon lights in corners. We see, you know, one or two men scattered around tables around the room, sitting by themselves, drinking. And we go up and this guy sees us and we're two foreign women. And I thought, oh, he's the only gay in the village, this dude.
Yes. You know,
sitting here drinking. And it was only Omani men in there. And he looked at us and he goes, you want that room there? And I thought, maybe there's a ladies only room. Like, why is he pointing us? So we go through this door and we get to this restaurant. Mm-hmm. He thought we were lost and confused and we wanted food. And we came back and went, no, 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 we are here to drink. And they were like, oh, okay. And so we sat on these chairs and we ordered, like a can, pint size, 500 mils of beer. And then, yeah, it was all very dodgy. Like, it was all just men, you know, hiding their shame away in a back room.
Oh,
and
God,
we got talking to another man across from us. And, you know, I have a few words of Arabic. And he said, oh, you speak some Arabic. We should get married. And are you interested? I was like, geez, I'm sure he's got one wife already. So, there was not a lot of alcohol to be had in Oman.
Yes, so if you're into drinking, Oman is not the place to go. We must leave it there. Melissa, it's always good to talk to you because you always have such interesting stories to tell, especially on an international level. Thank you for joining me here.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
That's Melissa Greimer in Melbourne. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Faces going to so many places, where the weather is much better and the food is so much cheaper. While
Well, I help her with her baggies, for the baggage is so heavy. I hear the players ready by the gateway to take my love away. And I can't believe that she really knows me. And it's getting me so. It's getting me so. I'd be much stronger, for the wheels are turning faster as I hear the winds are blowing. I know that she is leaving on a jet plane without the runaway. And I can't believe that she really knows me. And it's getting me so. It's getting me so.
This is Ling Pang for Bondine Tunes International, and I talked with Carolina Glini, courtesy of Livewire. Hello, Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Yes, indeed. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. The weather is similar to where you are today, isn't it? Nice and sunny.
Yes. Yeah. That's the best.
I'm very impressed with your career as a manager, as a producer. You produce many, many bands. And including your father, the composer, Ivan Galini.
Yes, that's the worst. That's what? The hardest. That's the hardest because it's a different style of music. So now for the first time, he's doing a dance track and that's more my territorium. But his music is so beautiful, fairly straight from the heart. But now he is making the straight from the heart melody with a dance beat, and I finally can recognize myself in it, because in the past I used to have a dance label. In the 90s I had a very, very successful dance label, Game Records, and so I've stopped for a while, but I have been asking my father for 25 years, please start again with producing music. And he did. So I needed to restart also again.
Really delightful news that your father's back with a brilliant new single. Tell us about the new single.
Yes, Fata Morgana.
What's Fata Morgana mean in English?
Fata Morgana, that's in the desert. When you are walking in the desert, you don't have water anymore and you think you see things. You know, when you think you're in the desert, you see the trees and you see water and you see everything. You think you see something. That's a Fata Morgana.
The single is now released?
Yes, it has been released.
It's all over Europe and England because you're from Belgium.
Yes, it's a release, a digital release. It's not on a single or CD because they don't sell anymore, but it's a digital release worldwide. And we already getting reactions on YouTube worldwide.
The video come with it. It's amazing. Who produced the video for the track?
Well, the guys that I always work with from Camera Works in Belgium, and they are very good. They also did a video clip of Don't Take My Dream Away, of Happiness, of Winter Memories. And now this one is more an international look because the song is also a little bit more in the Eastern. I call it East meets West sound because it's a Spanish guitar in it, but it's also the typical sound from the Middle East that's in it. And then with the European dance beat, as we say, it makes a combination that is a new sound, a new style of music. And then a very good gimmick in it.
I understand your father, Ivan Galini, he produced and composed this track.
Composed and produced, yes.
How long did it take him to come up with this beautiful tune?
Well, he always says it takes as long as the song takes, because it's in a moment, he has an idea, he starts playing it, and then from there he's building on. But he's making, if this one is a cut, because the original one is also on his album Music Forever, but that's really the melodic one, the remix. And now he made a dance mix of it, and it all started in the studio just as a joke.
That's
there was
a
little bit time left, and he was in the studio, and he said, oh, well, let's do something with it. And for the first time, he said to the guy from the studio, you don't send it to my daughter, because she's because she's going to do everything with it. But that was at the time when Music Forever, the album, was released. And that's a completely different style. And that's why I was not supposed to hear it. But then Theo from the studio, he sent it anyway to me. And I was immediately like, wow, this is it. This is dancing. This is summer. This is what it has to take. But then it took me 2 years before I released it because I had a little bit of health problems and I didn't do a lot. Mm-mm. But now I restarted, and that's why we are now trying to make it the after summer hit.
How are you feeling now? Are you feeling much better physically? You look really well.
Thank you.
So being a manager, tell me about your career in terms of management. I believe you manage other bands as well, and that had number one hit in Europe. Do you want me to tell me about that?
Yes. That was in the 90s. In the 90s, I had a very successful dance label, Game Records. And in the first place, I was manager only from a boy band, Bibi Jerome and the Bang Gang. But yeah, you know how it works. I was a woman in this business and an all man. So they tried everything to get rid of me. And then I said, okay, whatever. And I restarted with a girl band called Def Dames Dope. And then I said, I'm not going to make the record companies rich again. I am going to do everything myself, because if I have everything in my hands, then I can control everything. And the whole point is that I started as manager, as label, as publisher. Of course, it's not that easy because, you know, music business, it's all about the money. It's big major companies, they invest millions in groups. Especially the UK, the USA, big territories, really investing a lot of money. So I had licensing deals, but there are also a lot of territories that I didn't have licensing deals. So I needed to do everything myself. And of course, I'm a little label. I'm not a big major label, and that's not helping. So if you know what I mean.
I know, being a female and you managed to succeed eventually. Yes. Was it very difficult at the start when you're approaching companies and they know that you're a female? How did you prove yourself that you could be just as good as a male management?
Yeah, well, a lot of male hormones help in this business. Yeah, it's true. I needed to fight myself into the male event.
The male world.
The male world.
You have managed to have hits around the world. Well, of course, with problem, but nothing is easy in this world, isn't it?
No, that's true. But it's just push, 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 and keep on pushing. And I remember when I was only the manager of B.B. Jerome and the Bang Gang, that all the males, we scored 5 number one hits here in Belgium.
Well done.
And it was like, oh yeah, she was lucky. But then again, I did the same with Def Dame Dope. And then I was N record company manager, everything. Then the guys were like, it's not luck, not only luck. You have to have the right track. You have to have the right attitude. They have the right artists around you that really want to work and go for it. There's a lot of things that you have to take care of, because it's being a woman, especially in Belgium, they really were like, oh yeah, she's trying. But then after Def Dame Dope, I had another success and another success. So, and that was like, and I remember one day there were troubles with the girl band, as usual with artists. They wanted to have another manager, but I needed to stay record company for them. So what happened? I just, I said, okay, we're going to try to find. Nobody wanted to work with him. And there was one guy here in Belgium, and also a colleague of me who was manager of Belgian bands, very successful. And he said to me, Carolina, you are doing scoring around different territories outside Belgium. We don't know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. And that was the point that I was saying to myself, you did it good. Because they didn't want to take over the girl band, because there were not a lot of managers from working in Belgium doing things outside Belgium. And of course, you go with the flow. It happens. So they call you to come on tour for promo and this and that. So you go and you go and you go and you need to push and push and push. That's the only way.
Have you got a big fan base in Europe and in UK and in America?
You mean for my father or for the rest?
For your father.
For my father. Well, I am working on that. Mm-hmm. That's not easy. That's always the same, building and building and building. Mm-hmm. And trying and hoping to find the right partners that really would like to go with it. Mm-hmm. But these days, it's completely different than the 90s. In the 90s, it was another world. Now it's all social media. And of course, I haven't been doing anything for 12 years. So I've lost a piece of the social media thing, because I had a complete different life. I was married. I built another company together with my husband, a ship repair. completely different.
Do you share similar passion in like cooking and holidays and things like that, or you?
Well, I cook and he eats. He loves my food. I love to cook, and it seems I'm a good cook. Everybody tells me that.
Yeah.
So the job he's doing, I do the paperwork, and for the rest, we have one passion together. That's with the boat. Yeah. We go on a boat trip. And when he takes in the weekend free, then normally we go with the boat for one weekend together in Holland, Belgium, those territories, because you cannot go too far. So that's one thing we have in common.
Yeah.
And for the rest, if he said you want to do music, it's your job. You do whatever. And he's sometimes not happy because when I'm in a new release, that still I haven't forget. It's 24 hours. So, and that my father restarted, I really needed to restart from zero. because the basics are completely different than in the 90s. Mm-hmm. In the 90s, you had a song, you had a band, you go on television, you do radio, you go on tour, and then you built like that. We did with Def Dame Stop, the pre-program of LaToya Jackson in South Africa.
Yes.
And maybe not to say, but it was the truth. LaToya Jackson, she really asked a lot of money for interviews. Really. Mm-hmm. And because of that, Def Dame Stop got all the interviews. We did, in 14 days, we did five shows. We had 44 interviews. We had more than 20 TV recordings and radio recordings. And that's also a little bit of luck you need to have.
And then let's go back to your father, a very lovely person, great sense of humor. He has composed and produced more than 150 songs and in different genres. He's not just in one particular genre. He had produced music in romantic songs and tango and bossa nova. He's a very talented man and he's continued to produce more music. And I would like to play a piece of music by your father, Ivan Glini, Winter Memories. Do you think you want to become a full-time management for your father now?
Well, everything will depend on what's going to happen with Fata Morgana. There is another track coming on, also a dance track. A premiere. But everything will depend on what's going to happen now with this song.
Yeah. So with Games Record, it's a management company that you set up and you are the sole management of that. Are you currently working with other bands as well in conjunction with your father, or your father is the one that you're focusing on at the moment?
At this moment, it's only my father I'm focusing on. And I don't know if I'm going to continue with other artists because I'm getting older. Point one, I am married. It's another thing because in the 90s, I was flying from one country to another. And my relationship during that days was also with one of my artists. And he got everywhere around the world with me in the pre-program of Tef Tame Stope. But when our relationship stopped, I realized that it's not easy for being a woman and having a relationship in the music business. Because, you know, men, they can go from one country to another around the world and the women stay at home. But as a woman, it's not that easy to say to your husband, now I'm going, bye-bye, and just fix your own food and everything. And that's why my life has changed. And I really hope that I can really succeed with this track from my father, with Fata Morgana. And then we will see what happens. But touring and going from one country to another, I'm not going to do anymore.
What about your father? Has he planned any trips or shows in the near future?
No, he's more a composer, producer than a performing artist. He gets on stage a Hammond's organ, a B3, and that thing, it's 190 kilos. So if he needs to go from one place to another, it's a heavy duty. And that's why he prefers making music, composing music.
He told me, I said, how hard do you work? Last time when we talked, he said he would go to the studio first thing in the morning for about 12 hours before a show. That's how dedicated he is. That's how passionate he is about music, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he also worked as a builder before. Is he still working as a builder?
As a demolition man.
Yeah. He said
still. He's 77. He's still every morning he wakes up and go working. Yeah, he's a little bit obsessed by it, I think. he doesn't
look that age. He's so energetic, you know. I think it's wonderful that he's putting his focus back on music because his music is much loved by many people who have already heard his music. I remember some of his songs when we talked last time. I love it. God, Don't Take My Dream Away.
Yes.
Remember that? And then there was a few more.
Happiness.
That's right. That was so beautiful. Can you sort of give us some ideas? His music would be, do you think it would be like somewhere for films?
I am working on that, but that's not easy. Yeah? That's really the lottery. Yeah? Because everybody wants to be in the movies. So I have a very good agent in America and they love his music, but it's the right time, the right place, the right moment for the right song.
And let's hope that when people hear the song, which I'd like you to introduce, if you're a filmmaker and you want to use the music, contact Carolina.
Yes. The more the better.
Do you know Steve Osborne very well?
Yeah. In the 90s.
You knew Steve all this time?
All this time. I had my own record company in the UK for 4 years.
Long-time friends.
Since the 90s, since 93.
Have you always maintained contact with Steve Osborne?
And when I was married, I've lost contact because I didn't do a lot anymore in the music business. But when I restarted, I called him and he's doing again a little bit of my promotion.
Can you tell us how do we get hold of your dad's music?
Yes. Steve has the backlinks of everything, so I can send you also. You can everywhere on digital platforms, on all digital platforms worldwide, you can have the albums. Also his back catalogue, there are 3 albums from the past, Evangelini and his music. Then Music Forever, the last album is on it. And then now the Fata Morgana single is also on it. So you can on everywhere.
And would you like to introduce the new single your father, Ivan Glini, has just released?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the new song Fata Morgana by Ivan Glini. Let's dance on it.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ling Pang for Bonang Tunes International, and I talked with Carolina Glini.
Leave on the lights, babe. I'm so scared of heights, babe. It hurts so hard when you fall. Think you've been somewhere, but you've really been nowhere at all. It's just like Key Largo, Melvin Douglas and Garbo, like Bogey and Lauren Bacall. We try to be cool, but dance like two fools at the bar. Me with my jive, you with your Chanel number five. Don't we just make the cat meow? Me and my pleats like Fred Astaire, you and your curls like Claudette Colbert. Ain't we about as cool as Iceland, baby, and how? My four walls, my mo's and my go-wise. I wrote you an old-fashioned song. For whatever it's worth, baby, this is your birthday song.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.